You ever hear a story so good you think somebody made it up? I'm Taildragger, and you're tuned to Radio Hanger. Pull up a chair, because this one is real, every frozen inch of it. July 15, 1942. Six P-38 Lightnings and two B-17 Flying Fortresses are heading across the North Atlantic. Operation Bolero, they called it. Ferry the fighters to England, get them into the fight. Simple enough on paper, but the weather over Greenland had other plans. A wall of fog and ice rolled in and swallowed the whole formation. They couldn't see a thing, couldn't climb over it, couldn't go around it. The flight leader made the call, put them down on the ice cap, all eight airplanes landed wheels up on the glacier, and every single crew member walked away. That alone is a story worth telling, but we're just getting started. The crews were rescued, the airplanes were left behind, and Greenland's ice cap did what it does. It buried them. Year after year, snowfall on top of snowfall, compressed into ice, and those eight airplanes sank deeper and deeper into the glacier. The military wrote them off. The world forgot about them. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, fast forward to 1981. A Kentucky businessman, an airplane dealer named Pat Epps, and a partner named Richard Taylor got the idea that those airplanes were still out there. And they wanted to find them. They figured the planes were sitting just under a few feet of snow, maybe 10, 15 feet at most. They'd dig them out, bolt on some new parts, fly them home. That was the plan. They were off by about 250 feet. It took them over a decade of expeditions just to locate the aircraft. The ice had moved. The whole glacier had shifted, carrying the planes with it. They weren't where the original coordinates said they should be. The team used ground-penetrating radar, magnetometers, every piece of technology they could get their hands on. Finally, in 1988, they got a hit. The airplanes were there buried under more than 260 feet of solid ice. Now here's where it gets interesting. How do you get an airplane out from under 268 feet of ice? You can't dig a hole that big. The logistics are impossible. So they came up with something nobody had ever tried before. They called it the Gopher. It was a device that used a copper heating coil to melt a 4-foot diameter shaft straight down through the ice. They'd lower it, let it melt, lower it again, over and over, until they reached the airplane. Then they built a cavern around the wreckage. Right there, inside the glacier, working in a space carved out of ancient ice with the temperature sitting at around minus 30 degrees, they decided to focus on one airplane, a P-38F Lightning, serial number 41-7630. She had been Lieutenant Harry Smith's bird. And when they finally reached her, she was in remarkable condition. The ice had preserved her like a time capsule, the tires still had air in them, the guns were still loaded with 50 caliber ammunition, but she was not in one piece. The weight of the ice had compressed and broken her apart. The twin booms were bent, the center nacelle was crushed, she had to come up in pieces. They cut her apart with steam and hand tools, loaded the sections into wire baskets, and hauled them up through that narrow shaft one piece at a time. The whole recovery operation, from first melt to last piece on the surface, took years of effort and millions of dollars. By the time they got everything topside, it was 1992, 50 years after she'd landed on that glacier. Now, most people would have looked at that pile of bent aluminum and corroded steel and called it a museum exhibit. Not these folks. They shipped the whole mess to Middlesboro, Kentucky, to a restoration shop run by a man named Bob Carden. And what that team did over the next 10 years is one of the most ambitious warbird restorations ever attempted. Think about what they were working with. This airplane had been crushed under the weight of a glacier. Every skin panel was wrinkled or torn. The main spar was bent. The engines, the Allison V1710 inline 12s that gave the Lightning its speed, were frozen solid. The instrument panel was destroyed. The landing gear was mangled. They essentially had to rebuild the airplane from the skeleton out. They used original Lockheed drawings. They tracked down new old stock parts from warehouses and surplus dealers all over the country. The engines were sent out for complete overhaul. Every hydraulic line, every electrical wire, every rivet had to be inspected, repaired, or replaced. The team fabricated new skin panels by hand, matching the original contours using the Lockheed blueprints and whatever surviving structure they could use as a template. The instrument panel was recreated with period-correct gauges, the cockpit was restored to wartime configuration. Even the original olive drab paint scheme was replicated, with the invasion stripes and the number markings she would have worn in 42. And here's the thing that gets me. Through all of that work, through all those years of painstaking restoration, there was never a question about whether it was worth it. This wasn't just an airplane. This was a piece of history that had been locked in ice for half a century, and bringing her back to flying condition was an act of reverence. October 26, 2002, 60 years and 3 months after she'd belly-landed on that glacier, Glacier Girl took to the sky again. The test pilot was Steve Hinton, one of the best warbird pilots alive. He lifted her off the runway at Middlesbrough and the crowd just lost it. Grown men were crying. Veterans who remembered the war were standing at the fence line, watching a ghost come back to life.
She flew beautifully. Those twin Allisons singing that unmistakable sound, that deep harmonic drone that only a lightning makes. Two counter-rotating propellers pulling her through the Tennessee air like the last 50 years had been nothing but a dream. Since that first flight, Glacier Girl has been a regular on the airshow circuit. She's been displayed at Oshkosh, at Sun and Fun, at events all over the country. The Lewis Air Legends organization, which took over stewardship of the airplane, has kept her in flying condition and made her one of the most recognized warbirds in the world. But here's what I think about when I see her fly. I think about the scale of what it took. Not just the money, which was north of $3 million by the end. Not just the time, which stretched over 20 years from first expedition to first flight. I think about the stubbornness. The sheer, unreasonable refusal to let that airplane stay buried. Pat Epps could have quit after the first expedition came up empty. He could have quit when they realized the planes were under hundreds of feet of ice instead of a few. Bob Carden could have looked at that crushed airframe and said it was too far gone, but none of them did. That's what warbird restoration is really about. When you get down to it, it's not a rational act. You don't restore a P-38 because it makes financial sense. You do it because that airplane carried a young man across an ocean in the middle of a world war, and when the weather tried to kill him, he put it down on a glacier and walked away. And 60 years later, someone decided that story deserved to keep flying. There are 7 other airplanes still down there, by the way, under the Greenland ice cap, the 2 B-17s and 5 more Lightnings slowly being carried toward the sea by the glacier's movement. Nobody's going after them right now. The cost is staggering and the logistics are almost impossible. But I've learned never to say never when it comes to people who love old airplanes. If you want to read more about Glacier Girl, there's a terrific account in the book The Lost Squadron by David Hayes. And the Smithsonian's Air and Space magazine did some wonderful coverage over the years. You can find more of our episodes at radiohanger.com. Fly safe out there. And next time you're at an air show and you hear those twin Allisons winding up, remember where she's been. 268 feet of ice, and she came back.